Deborah Levy's 1990 book, An Amorous Discourse in the Suburbs of Hell, is being reissued in a newly revised edition put out by the Grassroots Publishing House and Other Stories. With me in studio to talk about that book and other matters, I hope, Deborah Levy. Deborah, the book that has been republished, first of all, how would you describe the form of this book?
It's a long poem. It's a conversation between an angel who dives out of paradise, lands in the suburbs with a male accountant who is living there reasonably happily before she arrives to shake things up. So the two voices are she and he. Yes, as you say, published in 1990, then And Other Stories said they'd like to reprint it. And I said, oh, okay, I'll just go away with it for a week and do a few tweaks. I write in a very dank, dark shed, which I hire from a friend in her garden under an apple tree, and I didn't come out for a month.
It took that long?
It did. I just started to fly with it. And, you know, writers should never rewrite, actually. I don't believe in it. But in this case, I did think that it could do with another think. So there are two versions out in the world, which I like too. And Other Stories have done me proud. This is a beautiful cover. It's the title, long title, An Amorous Discourse in the Suburbs of Hell. It's in the shape of a tattoo. And that's what I'm reading from today.
All right. Well, let's hear a little bit from the book itself, and then we can talk more about what had to change so much in that month in that damp
okay.
shed.
She, I have come to save you from the suburbs of hell, to rub my skin against the regularity of your habits, to bend your thoughts like a spoon, to find your memories lost in software, dived like a thought out of paradise into your acrylic arms. He, uninvited, you flew into my semi and ate all my daffodils. I woke up to your starry tattoos, fingers tangled in your hair. I asked you to stay. Now you make incense from my heart and liver, spit small, mean feathers at my good intentions.
Deborah Levy reading from An Amorous Discourse in the Suburbs of Hell. What people didn't see as you read that, Deborah, was just how much actual acting and performance went into it. Does that happen with your prose work as well, or does this work bring something specific out in that fashion?
I think a poem does, you know, the way the cadence falls, the fact that it's a conversation in the suburbs where people are supposed to not talk to each other, and it, you know, we're all supposed to be on our computers and our phones. So I liked that idea of a conversation that was slapstick, a bit, you know, really a bit comic and philosophical. And what took me that month was to try and get that mix of the two, of slapstick and philosophy. You know, it's harder than it sounds. It's harder than I thought it was. So, yes, I did tend to sit in my shed and read it out loud as I was writing it.
The one thing that we should be pointed out in terms of the she and he sections, and I'm not quite sure why this is the case, she is quite definitely with a small s, a lowercase s,
yeah,
and everything down the edge of the page, no capital letters, all lowercase. He has a big capital letter for
yeah.
the beginning of his name, and every beginning line a big capital letter. Why that?
Yeah, I thought that I would make him the subject. You know, he is of this earth, and as Samuel Beckett told us, you know, we are from earth, there is no cure for that. So she's from the sky, and somehow to give her a capital letter made her more grounded than the kind of floating sensation on the page of lowercase. I don't really usually like the use of lowercase. I think it doesn't really suit me at all, but sometimes you just have to push yourself out of a comfort zone, and if something works on the page, accept it. So that's why.
How much is she, as certainly in the two sections you read for us there, she is very exciting, ethereal. There's something immediately interesting about her. He is very earthly and uninteresting in many ways.
Oh, that's not fair. I like him. I think he's a hero, my man from the suburbs. Look, his plan is to marry a woman, and this angel's turned up. And he's open to his own desires, you know. That's an odd thing to say, isn't it? He wants to chase something new in his life. She's turned up, and I didn't want to write a stereotype of an accountant. I think a lot about stereotypes when I write, why we call someone a stereotype. So I have him say to her, you know, when I was at university, I hennaed my hair.
He was wild.
And I wore a kilt. But now I own a water filter, he says. She says, but dream a little bit. Even your microwave is dreaming for you. And he says, look, I can't afford this sort of rhapsody. I was born in Hurst Pier Point. My dad sucks lemon jellies. You know, forgive me, wear and tear of 9 to 5. My eyes are closing, kind of thing. But in the end, he is content, and she flies back to paradise, leaving him in the suburbs to have a meal with his brother and his friend, the postman, Shivadar.
I'm not sure that you give him a better ending, but we leave that to the decision of the reader when they come to reading the book. I want to look back, if I could, at your recently published essay,
Yes.
Things I Don't Want to Know. From Notting Hill Editions, another beautiful production, in fact, like this one from
Yes.
And Other Stories. On the front of that edition, I specifically remember a quote, to become a writer, I had to learn to interrupt. And interrupt is in slightly big writing. Then to speak up, then to speak a little louder. And louder is in quite large writing. And then louder still in a very, very large writing. And then just in my own voice, which is smaller writing, not loud at all.
Yes.
What informed that quote for that piece of writing for you?
Well, that essay, Things I Don't Want to Know, which is now in paperback, published by Penguin, it looks at the female narrator, aged 50, goes back to her childhood in South Africa, which is my childhood, in Johannesburg. I left when I was 9. It then skips to when the narrator's 15, living in England, writing in transport cafes, pretending to be a writer, imitating a writer, and returns to middle age. So the childhood section is about how quietly I spoke when I was a child. And I was forever being ignored. Teachers shouted at me, speak up, speak up. I can tell you that anyone shouting at someone who has a quiet voice, it's not going to work. And what I remember about those years is discovering something about the power of silence, because it was sort of like what you leave out of stories is what everyone wants to know. So if you start to talk about your dad, someone will say, and do you have a mother? So people wanting to know more was quite a sort of interesting lesson in those more or less mute years. And then I just got more confident about voicing my thoughts, because that's what writing is. You know, it's chasing your thoughts, having the confidence to commit them to the page and not being laughed at, to chase arguments as well, and put those arguments into characters' mouths and walk them right into the center of the world and have them speak them, not necessarily loudly, but, you know, I began to understand the power of a softer voice.
I know when we spoke about your collection of stories, Black Vodka, when it was published, and you mentioned in that interview about the sparseness of your writing and how important it was for you actually to be spare in what you said. And you said, which I thought was quite interesting, you questioned whether it was a strength or a weakness.
Mm. Yeah, I do, because I'm such a brutal editor of my own work. I can't bear to be bored for one single second when I read. I don't really want to read and then sort of find the interesting bit. I need my attention snared right from the start. And, you know, so writers are readers first. It's interesting because the novel that I'm writing now, I'm halfway through, I decided not to edit so brutally in the first draft. And it's getting longer and longer. And every day I kind of open the file and I think this is much too long. And I'm kind of looking forward to that edit that I would normally have done at this stage. And we will see. But I do agree with Beckett when he said every word is a stain on the silence. So I like to earn every word. And it doesn't have to be a profound word, does it? It can be a swear word. It can be goodbye. But it's why it's a goodbye and what's happened before and what's happened next.
Deborah Levy has been talking to us about her recent republication, An Amorous Discourse in the Suburbs of Hell. It's published by And Other Stories.